Hello and welcome to the official Isuzu Ute A-Leagues podcast. I'm your host, James Dodd, standing in for the gaffer, David Wiener, this week. And, as ever, I am joined by two senior members of the A-Leagues dressing room. It is, of course, David Davutovic. Good afternoon to you, Dave.
Good evening, Doddy. Good evening, Tom.
And, as you just said, Tom Smithies. Tom, nice to be in the same room as you for once recording one of these podcasts.
I know, it's almost intimate.
Intimate indeed, gents. Let's get stuck into it straight away, shall we? Plenty to discuss on what was an electric round six of the Isuzu Ute A-League.
Special day for the Cahill family. Cahill into the game to replace Jez Lofthouse.
And it's still there for Robert Mack. And still, unbelievable!
The goal has been given. VAR has had a look and has said Ben Old has scored.
He looks into the middle, waiting for it. Can you believe it? Ben Mazzeo at just 18 years of age.
And Devola from 3-2 down to 4-3 up in the blink of an eye.
Mornaroli tries to bend it.
Is the quality of Bruno Fornaroli. It is an exquisite goal.
An exquisite goal it certainly was. We will come on to that and much more. Four undefeated teams remain in the Isuzu Ute A-League after six rounds. Wellington, top of the table, best ever start to a season. Bruno's banger against the Central Coast Mariners. Is he in the line for an Asian Cup selection? We will discuss that. And young Shay Cahill. Shay Hill making his debut for Brisbane Roar as well. Let's get into our moments of the round individually, though. Dave, I'll come to you first. What stood out for you? What brought a smile to that face?
Well, look, clearly Shay Cahill's debut. That is a tongue twister, that one. That was absolutely a highlight. However, my definitive highlight of the round was Daniel Garb's interview with the Texan Sydney FC fan. Yeah, they had to get creative with the massive delay. And I'll be honest, I struggled to stay on until the end of that match because I think it was after 11 o'clock that it finished. But how they managed to track down the mad Texan fan who came over all the way from the States to watch his beloved Sky Blue Sydney SC in what was an entertaining interview. I thought that was, 4 points to Garby, 4 points to Channel 10 and Paramount Plus. Very creative.
Yeah, very creative from Garby indeed. I actually think Garby's got a bit of history for that. I think he did the Campbelltown game last year. There was the ridiculous long delay as well. I'm going to jump in, Tom, just ahead of you. My moment of the round, and I'm biased here because I do have a big man crush on him as a footballer and a human being, Ulysses Davila. His performance in general, we spoke to him midweek talking about, you know, how close he came to actually quitting the game after everything that he's had to endure over the last 18 months, losing his wife and then getting a season-ending injury as well. Just the through ball to set up Matt Miller and then for him to win it, his finish. Yeah, for me, Uli Davila. Tom Smithies, your moment of the round to round us off?
Interesting you're talking about a good finish because I'm going for a good Swede. Marcus Antonsson, talking of man crushes as well. There's something about Marcus I really enjoy watching him play, his movement, his intelligence as a footballer. He's so good in the air for someone who's not a big guy. Scored that the header for the equaliser. Could have had a goal in the derby bar for a very marginal offside call. And all-round good guy as well. So, Marcus for me.
Marcus for you. Right, let's kick things off for the first game of the round, shall we? Suncorp Stadium, the venue. A 55-minute delay due to inclement weather in the area. Brisbane Roar 2, Western Sydney Wanderers 2.
Eunice, the cross in is a good one. The header, it's in. Antonsson. And just as it was against Newcastle, the Wanderers have come from two goals down.
Nikola Milojevic get things off and underway for Brisbane in this game. Jack Hinger scored a beautiful team goal, capped off a beautiful team goal, I should say, for Brisbane. 2-0 up and cruising. But the Wanderers did what they did against Newcastle Jets. Tom, 2-0 down at halftime, 2-2 in the second half. A young bench for Marco Redan's side. I think average age 18 or 19. Let's start with the Wanderers just while we're on it. What do you make of Marco Redan's team, given the injuries that they've had to undergo and endure, I should say, and the performance they put in? Are they putting in the type of performances and grinding out results like that when they're 2-0 down that says to you they could be there at the very, very pointy end of the season?
100%. 2-0 down, dreadful conditions, huge delay against a very young, hungry Brisbane team who came out at 100 miles an hour and threatened to blow them away, but they didn't quite. And then you see, talking to Jack Clisby last week, and one of the things he was talking about was the information they get from the coaches at the Wanderers and how they're drilled on, if this happens, this is how you respond. If this happens, this is how you respond. And they are so they absorb so much information before each game about their opponent. And I think you could see that in the way that they started to find holes in Brisbane's structure. And I thought it was a terrific game, particularly given the circumstances. Two attack-minded, well-drilled teams. You know, the fact that Jack Hingott pops up where he does for that goal says a lot about the way Brisbane are playing as well and the freedom for players to get forward. So I think also the other thing about Mark Rudan is he's now almost gone through a cycle of young players. There were some who maybe didn't fit the system or the attitude wasn't right. He's now promoting kids who his attitude he really seems to like, and he's putting them on the bench partly because he has to, but partly because he wants to, and giving them, you know, he'll throw them in. He's played a, 17, 18-year-old in a derby. So he'll put them in if he thinks they're good enough. And yeah, they'll definitely be there. I think both teams will be there, thereabouts at the end of the season.
Yeah, I agree with you. And just on that, I think it's worth noting the performance of Jurrit Hendricks as well. Asked to step in that back line. The back line has been ravaged by injuries. I'm told that Marcelo's injury is nothing serious. It is an Achilles issue that he has, but I don't think it's serious. So whether or not that leaves him unavailable for this weekend, not sure yet. The club haven't confirmed the scans that they've had from the doctors. But Dave, from a Brisbane perspective, I'm sure Ross Aloisi is someone that you've had a lot of dealings with over the course of, you know, both yours and his careers. What have you made of the Raw so far? Because they've got this tendency to play some absolutely scintillating football at times, but it looks as though maybe the younger elements of their team is what's causing them to maybe let leads slip or make a few mistakes, as you would expect young players and young teams to do.
Yeah, that's right. You have to expect that with young players, and Brisbane Roar and Ross Aloisi are definitely playing a lot of youngsters. And it's also Ross Aloisi's first season there. I mean, he was an assistant coach with Brisbane Roar only a few years ago. There would be some players who are left there, including Jack Hingott, from his time previously. But for the most part, this is a work in progress. It's a new project for Ross Aloisi, and particularly with the style of football they're trying to play, it will take time. But he seemed really positive. He's really interesting, Ross, when you listen to him post-game. There was the game in Wellington where he kind of flew off the handle, and then, you know, the other night, despite having let slip a two-goal lead, he was, effusive in his praise and particularly focusing on, the young Queensland talent coming through. But Ross has really impressed me. I feel like, he's done a great apprenticeship, a coaching apprenticeship over a longer period, also in the women's game. I think that's really helped him, and particularly, and we discussed it a few weeks ago, almost, that finishing score, the PhD, if you like, over with, Kevin Muscat at Yokohama F. Marinos. And he just looks like he's ready to go. You know, he's a complete package. I mean, he looks like $1 million, like his brother John on the side of the pitch. But, the way he's coaching, the attack-minded, football, aggressive style of football, and really added that grunt element to the team where, even if they're not playing well, they can grind out a result. So I'm really loving the evolution of this Brisbane Roar team, and I'll be intrigued to see where they sit at the end of the season. At this stage, I reckon they'll be playing finals.
I thought Ross's comments about Henry Hoare and that sort of Queensland culture are important, because they lost a lot of that a few years ago. There was a big exodus of good young players. Researching a piece on Henry Hoare last week, he drifted away from Brisbane when they changed their youth coaches, and he ended up at Perth and it didn't work out there. He was nearly lost to the game a couple of times, and Warren Moon, who made concerted effort to get him back from the NPL and get him back into the club, and there are others around him, that they the crowd resonates with them. They people feel it's one of us. We're seeing a kid who's come through the ranks. Henry Hoare was born and raised on the Sunshine Coast. That's where he played most of his football. So if we're going to get, as we build the fan bases for these clubs, it's very much going to be built on the culture of having players that the fans can identify with as one of their own.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you saw that from the All Access episode earlier this season with Brisbane and the changes they're undergoing as a football club and the identity that they're trying to, I suppose, to adopt and to mould the shape of the football club. And it is really impressive what Ross has done since coming in. They face Adelaide United away, so he's going back to Adelaide this weekend. They're fourth on the ladder. It is looking very, very promising for Brisbane Roar indeed. But from one Aloisi to another, John Aloisi's Western United were beaten 1-0 at home. I say home in inverted commas, in Miles Stadium in Ballarat over the weekend. That is now 5 defeats in a row for Western United.
And the return pass is on. The Phoenix are in. And the flag is up. The goal has been given. VAR has had a look.
I think what was interesting, gents, about what John had to say after the game was, he said, yeah, it's five losses in a row. They're rock bottom of the table. They didn't have a great season last season. But he was pretty, he was pretty upbeat in his press conference afterwards, saying, listen, I think the quote exactly was that of the last four games, their performances have been better than their opposition in those matches, yet they've not come away with a single point from any of them. Dave, it's hard to ask the question, but is there growing pressure on John Aloisi at the moment?
Yes and no. There's always pressure on a coach, you know, when he's bottom of the table, when, you know, they've had five losses on the trot. So from that point of view, I think, you know, there will always be pressure mounting on a coach like John Aloisi. But, you know, the fact that he's won a title there, the fact that they have played at so many different venues, the fact that, you know, there were signings that came in late in the piece, and, you know, I think they have probably cut budgets a little bit this season compared to, you know, to previous campaigns. I think all of that stuff must be factored in. Of course, Western United will, you know, later in the season be moving to the West, where, you know, they'll be playing in the longer term. So I think, you know, when you look at the trips, and I know John's spoken about it, you know, a trip to Ballarat is, it's important from a community engagement viewpoint, but in some ways it's almost like an away trip for the players because of the volume of travel, that's associated to it. In saying that, you know, ultimately they're all kind of in the excuses bucket, aren't they? They need to get some wins. Other teams need to travel there as well. I mean, considering they're on the bottom and they've only got 3 points from six games, it's quite extraordinary because they absolutely have deserved more. They've played some really good football, and there's some real positives to take out of it. I think that partnership between Nikita Rukavica and Noah Botic, I think that will bear fruit in the foreseeable future. I know you mentioned Uli Davila, who you're enamoured with, Scotty, as we all are, but, you know, Daniel Peña is a guy who is capable of doing similar things. And again, we've seen flashes of it. I think we'll see it more consistently moving forward. So I think they're tracking in the right direction. But if you've got five losses on the trot and confidence is low, you can kind of fall into that hole and you just can't get out of it. So they really need to just roll their sleeves up and pick up some points over the next few weeks. Otherwise, they could be in a hell of a lot of trouble.
I think if you then flip the ladder, gents, and you're looking at a team in Wellington Phoenix who have defied all expectations this season. I think if you look at what Giancarlo Italiano said at the start of the year, where he was asked the question, you know, everyone's written you off, especially because this is your first coaching gig, the club's most successful ever coach, and Ufuk Tale is not here anymore, you've not been able to bring any players in. He said it was disrespectful that people said that they weren't going to be up there. To be honest, the job that he's done is quite simply incredible. If you look at them now, Tom Smithies, they're top of the league, they're undefeated, it's their best ever start to a league season. And I'm not a massive, massive believer in or adopter of the XG stats, but, you know, John Aloisi said that his side deserved more than what they got out of this game. They created lots of chances. Their XG for this game was 1.08, Wellington's was 1.86. Wellington, I think, deserved to win this game, and Costa Barbarossa said as much afterwards. What is it that you've been so impressed by about Wellington, Tom, and how far can Giancarlo Italiano take this side? Because it's seemingly no fluke, the position they're in.
Well, it's interestingly enough, I was talking to him yesterday, and that he's so not getting carried away with where they are. He says it's a good beginning and because some good processes being laid down. He's very much from the process school of coaching. Mm. And you just keep doing the patterns, you keep doing the repetition, you develop and you build over time. It's not about one game, two games, three games. It's how the season develops. And we were joking about how Alex Ferguson used to say, if you were top of the league after Christmas, then you were in with a good shout. Once you get through that clutch of games, and, you know, he's got to go through that as well. The schedule's a lot more disrupted over Christmas and New Year, there's a lot more midweek games and all that kind of stuff. And it is still relatively early days, and that's very much what he was saying. But absolutely, to take over from Tale so seamlessly when Tale had such a big rap and everyone raves about him, myself included, what he did there. And the guy who, I don't think it was disrespectful to imagine that they were going to come last because there's no track record there. There's not at senior level. There's huge amount of work done at youth level and as assistant. And the talking to a couple of guys at Wellington this week about why they chose Giancarlo Italiano, and obviously they had 4 years to observe him, but it was about his breadth of knowledge of not just how you coach players on the pitch, but how you deal with the board, how you deal with the media, all that breadth of things that they felt comfortable he was ready to do. And there's a lot of things going to running a football club.
Yeah, and I've been so impressed with Giancarlo Italiano, just the way he carries himself in his press conferences. He was asked in the post game in the press conference after the win at Western United about, you know, were you ever worried about the amount of chances and the fact that Western were getting on top of you? He said no. He said, because I'll be honest with you, I made a tactical change, 4-1-4-1. I knew that would come, but I knew we could exploit them, as happened with the goal. And he said, the way I have set my team up to defend is we will leak chances. But if you look at the chances, and these were his words, if you look at the chances that we conceded, Alex Paulson was never really overly tested in that game. He probably saves that, as we've come to expect with Alex Paulson, and Alex Paulson himself will probably believe that, you know, I should be making those saves. But, I mean, just a final word on Alex Paulson. He was told 8 days before the start of the season that he was going to be the number one. And it's those kind of decisions that Giancarlo Italiano talked through, and he said, I invited Jack Duncan into my office and said, this is my decision. I want you to go out there and support Alex Paulson. And he's done that as well. So it seems as though everybody at that football club is loving life under Giancarlo Italiano. And you know, they're top of the league going into round seven. They're at home to Newcastle Jets. They are absolutely flying at the moment. Next up, the lightning-affected game at Allianz Stadium. Sydney FC 3, Perth Glory 2.
And Sydney put the game to bed. Big chance here. Oh, Glasson has got it. And Ufuk Talay says, finally, we've got the points now secured.
Two-hour delay. 3 hours and 35 minutes, I think, all up it took to complete this game. Tom Smithies. Ufuk Talay has 2 wins from 3 matches in charge of the Sky Blues. And most crucially, they now have a win at Allianz Stadium this season. What was your assessment of this game?
Really important win for a number of reasons. The fact that they had that win at Allianz, they've scored goals at Allianz finally. They managed to endure crazy conditions, the delay in things. The win wasn't so much down to the way that he wants them to play. The win was down to Joe Lolley producing a brilliant shot when he just missed an easy, much easier chance to Robert Mack scoring a goal, et cetera, et cetera. These are moments that are so important because the senior players produce those moments, they produce a win. All the while in the background, he's coaching them. He's trying to develop that style of play, which is going to take weeks and months to take hold. But as they keep picking up points and building confidence, both as a team and in the system that he's trying to inculcate in them, then suddenly you'll find they're climbing the table slowly and everything is a lot easier than it is. You look at John Aloisi, who is no doubt coaching his backside off, but he can't get a break at the moment. He needs a couple of lucky goals. And there is an element to which those Sydney goals, although they were both very well taken, there was a luck in the build-up to them that Talay will take and say, right, we'll just bunker down, get these points while we're sort of building what I want to build.
Yeah, he's not bad, that Joe Lolley, is he? I'd say easily in the top 20 players in the league, Dave Dabutovic. But if you flip it onto the other side of things here, Perth Glory, I think that's now 14 away games without a win for the club. Stadge is cut a very frustrated figure in the post-match press conference. He was really pretty scathing of his team, actually. He lost total control, shape and discipline. The quality of passing and movement not good enough. Should have put the game to bed inside the opening 20-25 minutes were the words of Alan Stajic. How do you assess his start to life in charge of Perth Glory, Dave? Because I know there were a lot of big raps on Stajic going into this one. We saw the job that he did in the men's game with the Mariners before obviously doing a magnificent job with the Philippines. What do you put this rocky, rough start to the season down to?
Yeah, well, he did have a late start, didn't he? Because he had to complete his FIFA World Cup commitments with the Philippines before joining the squad. So, you know, in an ideal world, he would have, you know, got in there in late June and got his feet under the desk and, you know, had those West Ham games and the West Ham game rather in pre-season to, you know, to tinker with his squad and whatnot. So I guess there's an element of that. I don't think it's that bad a squad, Perth Glory. I think it's actually a decent squad. And you look at the players and the quality coming off the bench with Mekanef and, you know, Polakowski and Kamau and, you know, someone like Daniel Benny. Yes, he's young, but, you know, he's shown he started most of the games this season and looked decent. So I think it's a decent squad, although there has been a little bit of turnover. Again, work in progress, and I think there are a lot of teams in that boat. That this is where it's really important to pick up those points early in the season. So when you get to that midway mark, the two-thirds of the way, you know, through the season, you're there and thereabouts, and you can hopefully pick up a little bit of momentum. But, you know, obviously it's been a challenge for them. There's, you know, the off-field side of things where, you know, previous owner Tony Sage departed. So obviously, you know, there would have been a little bit of lack of clarity from Stagic's viewpoint. But in saying that, look, the players are all professional and, you know, it's they've shown enough positive signs there for them to, you know, be able to, and I think there's enough quality for them to be able to challenge. The positives, I think Adam Taggart scoring is a massive positive for them. He looks really up and about and motivated this season. And perhaps just a little timely reminder to Graham Arnold ahead of the Asian Cup that he's still there, probably doesn't figure in a lot of people's discussion when it comes to Asian Cup squad selection. But obviously with Brandon Borrello out, they do need another.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I think we can have that conversation shortly with regards to the forwards for the Asian Cup, because the man we're going to discuss next, no doubt, played a pivotal role in Melbourne Victory's 2-2 draw at Industry Group Stadium against the Central Coast Mariners.
Fornaroli tries to bend it. Oh, Bruno Fornaroli! That is the quality of Bruno Fornaroli.
Bruno Fornaroli, is that arguably one of the best A-League goals you've ever seen? Because I'm going to throw it out there to you, Tom Smithies, first up. There was nothing wrong with anything in that move at all. I used to work with Ray Houghton in England, and he would say to me, he said, Dozzy, he said, you show me a goal and I'll show you a mistake. I could not see anything wrong with that goal. So you might say, yeah, maybe they should have closed him down a bit more. But Bruno Fornaroli, the result aside from Melbourne Victory, which is their fourth draw in a row, Bruno Fornaroli is in an outstanding form at the moment. And surely Graham Arnold cannot ignore the form that El Tuna is in.
No, I don't think you can ignore it at all. And to address your various points there, I'm going to draw a comparison between Fornaroli's goal and Volupele's goal in the same game. There's a lot of talk about two amazing goals. Fornaroli's goal was world class because he's forced essentially away from goal, away from the wing. They didn't do much wrong in terms of trying to close him down, but you can't completely cut off the opportunity for the shot. And what he produces is miraculous, whereas Volupele is allowed to sort of time and space in the D, on the edge of the box, to sort of chip the ball towards the top corner. And that defending would worry me a lot more than what the Mariners did for Fornaroli's goal. In terms of the Socceroos, the only thing I'd say is he didn't impress when those two games when he did play. He found it hard, and international football is difficult. You know, the A-League is a transitional league. Player with such smart movement as Fornaroli will find space as the teams go back and forth. But he's got that ability to do something, to put the ball in the top corner from 30 metres out of the blue. Given the Borrello's injury, I would be looking at Fornaroli thinking, I'd love to have you on the bench and bring you in, because you won't be fazed by it and you'll rile the opposition. You'll put yourself about in a way that other teams have done to Australia at times. I'd be voting for him, absolutely.
Dave, does Bruno Fornaroli make the Asian Cup squad for you?
Yeah, more on that later. I just thought I'd mention, a bit taken aback by the criticism of Volupele for that fantastic first class goal. I thought that was quite scathing from Tom Smithies. Very unfair. I thought it was an outstanding goal with, you know, beautiful technique and close touches there from Nishant to lose his
mark. My point, David, was that he was given time and space to do it.
Nothing
wrong with the goal, but Fornaroli produced absolute rabbit out of a hat.
Okay. All right. Apologies, Tom. I might have misheard you. But on Bruno, I mean, that was outstanding. You kind of know with Bruno, when he's on that left wing, you've got his back to goal, you know he's going to roll inside onto his right boot. But as predictable as it is, he still somehow manages to, you know, drop the shoulder, lose his marker with a little, you know, a jinx, a shimmy, and find room to unleash on his right boot and, you know, curl a shot in. Now, that shot and the execution was unbelievable. It's almost as if it just kept rising and rising and rising and, you know, sneaking in under the crossbar and into the roof of the net. Outstanding finish. I'll give you that one, Tom. But, he's... he's been outstanding for Melbourne Victory. I mean, a lot of people criticised Victory signing him, you know, circa 12 months ago from Perth Glory. A lot of people, I think, ruled a line through him. He probably had some challenges last season settling in, although it wasn't, you know, an easy situation to walk into at Melbourne Victory last season. But he's absolutely flying this campaign. He's loving his football. I mean, that attacking quartet, if you like, is, again, relishing playing with, you know, with all of those players. And he's absolutely on track to challenge for the Golden Boot. As for your question about Socceroos, he absolutely has to be in contention. I guess there's a school of thought, does Graham Arnold look to 2026 World Cup as, I guess, Ange Postecoglou did, for instance, in 2015 in terms of, you know, picking some of those younger players who've got, you know, that longer-term future with the Socceroos. But I guess under the circumstances, Bruno, although he's, you know, 36, you know, on his current form, he absolutely has to be considered the Asian Cup.
Before you bring the wrath of the Volupalai family and fan club down upon my head, I was just pointing, it's very nicely taken goal, but there's not a lot you can do about four in a row is my point. I think with better pressing of the ball, you could cut off Volupalai before he even got a chance to pull his foot back.
It's one thing to know what they're going to do. It's another thing to stop them, right? I think that's the point.
Like Davidovich talking.
Two Ronnies in the studio today.
Gents, still thought it was very harsh, Tom. Very harsh.
Before we switch focus to the Mariners, fellas, that's four draws in a row for Melbourne Victory. Now, Tony Popovich said after the game that he's pleased with where they're at, albeit he would have liked a few more points. Just very quickly from the pair of you, how are you assessing Victory? Because as Dave said recently, you know, they've got a fantastic quartet up front, but they haven't really been firing that much in recent weeks.
Difficult run of games. I know Central Coast have been struggling, but Central Coast are also, we've discussed briefly, they're not playing badly. At times they're playing quite well. So I think we have to remember where Victory were at a year ago, not even a year ago, just a few months ago, to think about the youth at the heart of their midfield. There's a lot to like about that team, and as I've said every week with monotonous regularity, the Popovich's teams build through the season, and I expect you look at now they're only 4 points off the top, so I reckon they're coming there or thereabouts near the end of the season.
Yeah, I think they're right up there. They'll clearly play finals, and I envisage them still having a lot of improvement left. I think there's been a lot of, you know, there've been injuries, suspensions, you know, Traore, Miranda, so on and so forth. I think Azani still has a lot of upside. So if they keep cracking, on this trajectory, I think they're absolutely a title contender. Another interesting one I'd like to reference is that we talked about Bruno Fornaroli and the Socceroos. My understanding is that the Socceroos Asian Cup squad will be picked sometime between Christmas and New Year's. So that essentially gives all A-League players another three games, three opportunities to showcase themselves through Graham Arnold and the Socceroos coaching staff. So that applies for all A-League players. I'm not sure there'll be too many kind of bolters that come into the mix outside of, you know, Arnie's sort of 50 or 60 names that he's put down on the list. But it certainly gives an opportunity to, you know, some A-League players to, you know, really entrench themselves in terms of the Asian Cup squad. We mentioned Bruno Fornaroli with Melbourne Victory. Another one who's interesting, and I know he didn't play at the weekend, but Jason Guerrier, I think with that right back position, we see Ryan Strain is now injured and almost certainly ruled out of the Asian Cup. So I think right back, it was one of the problem positions, if you like. There was a lot of rotation there during the Qatar World Cup. So right back is certainly up for grabs. Do they go for a younger player to throw into the mix? Nathaniel Atkinson is just coming back from injury. We've seen, Lewis Miller obviously do well there in the last few games. But I think it certainly brings some of the A-League players into the equation. So whether it's a younger player or one of the older ones, but I certainly think Jason Guerrier on the form of this season, assuming he's fit and continues that form, could potentially come into the mix.
Yeah, it's a very good shout, Dave. And I think with those that striking position, I think there's three strikers in my mind in the A-League who are competing for one position at the moment. And we've already discussed two of them. There's another one coming up, which we'll get to shortly. Mouth-watering clash round 7 as well in the A-League this weekend. Western Sydney Wanderers against Melbourne Victory to round us out on Sunday. Next up, before we move on to the next game, Newcastle-Melbourne, Central Coast Mariners. I've quoted XG already this season, this podcast, I should say. 2.81 was their XG for this game, the Mariners. Mark Jackson says the goals they're conceding are their Achilles heel. He's not happy with the way in which they're conceding the sloppy goals that he labelled them. Bruno Fornaroli, it's not really a sloppy goal, but what led to it, he believes, was avoidable. Smithies, the Central Coast Mariners are still down at the towards the foot of the ladder, but am I right in saying that the eye test so far has been that they are actually playing pretty well and they are creating an awful lot of opportunities? Their problem has actually just been putting the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, just as with Victory a moment ago, let's think about where they were a few months ago and think about who's left in the meantime. We all know that Nick Montgomery was a huge, huge role to fill, but losing Jason Cummings, losing Sammy Silvera, etc. Nectar Triantis, you know, there's a whole bunch of players they've lost and their coach. It would be so easy for them to tail away and just fall off. And I think we have to sort of give Mark Jackson some credit for the situation he's come into. The club are absolutely rock solid behind him. There's no doubt about that. There's no sort of concerns, worries. They believe they're on the right path. And you know, his track record is developing youth, and that remains the Mariners model. So I think I'm not sure they're going to win the league, but I don't think they're going to be down the bottom come the end. I think they'll start gathering some points, gathering some goals and climbing the table.
Yeah, I think you're right. And what better opportunity to try and do that this week? They are at home Friday night against Western United, a team that, as we know, are in horrid form at the moment. Okay, just up the road from the Mariners, Newcastle Jets 0, Melbourne City 2.
Arslan, they're lining up Jamie McLaren! And Melbourne City lead 2-0.
That third striker, gents, that I wanted to discuss in the Asian Cup selection field was Jamie McLaren. Did his confidence the world of good, scoring the all-important goal to make it 2-0 in this game. Pretty much killed off the Jets. What's been your assessment of Aurelio Vidmar's City side so far, Dave? This is going to be, once they get, you know, the coming game, round 7 out of the way, that'll be 4 away games in a row if you factor in the AFC Champions League as well. It hasn't left Aurelio Vidmar an awful lot of time, I suppose, to build day in, day out on the training ground with this Melbourne City side, but a good win nonetheless against Newcastle. Do you think they're going to start climbing up the tables fairly soon?
Yeah, good win, and he's also picked up a lot of frequent fly points during his 5 or 6 weeks in his tenure, Aurelio Vidmar. It's been a very challenging period. I think he spoke about that after the game against Newcastle, with, you know, so many games, international windows. They lost a lot of players to international duty, both, you know, senior and youth internationals, you know, in that squad. So it's been tough, but that was a crucial win for them just to stabilise and buy them a little bit of time. You know, McLaren getting on the score sheet will do his confidence absolute wonders. Matthew Lecky coming back, making his, excuse me, A-League debut off the bench. That was a huge positive. And then Tolgoy Arslan, who, you know, produced one of his best performances of the season, showing his absolute class. Look, at his best, I think he's absolutely a Johnny Warren medal contender. He's had some challenges with a foot injury, I believe, throughout the course of the season, but he seems to be getting better. And yeah, I think they're only going to improve. They've just got too much quality there. And yeah, Aurelio, just when you listen to Aurelio, he's just got this real confidence and surety about him. I mean, he's essentially a veteran coach, isn't he? He's been coaching for, you know, the better part of 15 years. He's had 6 years away in Asia. You know, he's been in the Socceroos setup. He's just a very, very seasoned coach who's gone deep into the, you know, the Asian Champions League. And, you know, he's got experience dealing with, you know, with top players. So I think he's a good fit for them at the moment. And I think they're going to be dangerous. You know, I'm not sure about the next few weeks, but certainly in 2024, I think they're a team that will really, really kick on the run home.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Dave. I think it's a really valid and good point you make about, you know, Tolga Arslan getting over that. I think it's a toe injury that he's been managing the whole time. Matt Leckie being back in the side and coming into hopefully an injury-free run right ahead of the Asian Cup. And of course, if Jamie McLaren can keep finding the back of the net, you would think that he would be in that Asian Cup squad. It may well be that he would be one of the forwards to miss out if you look at the likes of Mitch Duke and Cassini Yengi. Tom, Newcastle, the other side. I know you've spoken to Rob Stanton quite a few times over the last few years or whatnot. How do you assess the Jets? Because I think if you look at them, he said that second goal really deflated them. They're a young side. He knows what he's got to work with, Rob Stanton, and to be honest, that isn't an awful lot in terms of experienced players when you look at, you know, the opposition in Melbourne City at the weekend. What do you make of the Jets? Because it feels as though they're another team that on their day can cause anyone problems. It's just trying to mitigate and navigate those matches when you've got a squad full of young players in there.
And it's about owning those crucial moments. You know, that's what City did so well and could have always done so well. They have players who are calm. Who, you look at Jamie McLaren's finish for the second goal. It's such an effortlessly quality finish versus the kids who Newcastle have got. And you just look at the team that they started with. Philip Kankar, you've got Mark Natter, Lucas Moragas, Kostas Gros is still young, Clayton Taylor, Bahaja is still quite young. There's not much of an experienced spine there. Now, for me, the hope for them is you've got Rene Piscopo comes off the bench after injury. Archie Goodwin is not an experienced player, but he's a player of so much promise and has had so many injuries. If they can manage him, and they talked a lot about restricting his load and manage bringing him back slowly. If they can put Archie Goodwin up front with Bahaja and with Piscopo and Grozos and those kind of guys potentially creating chances for him, then they can definitely hurt teams. The problem is having the belief and owning those moments, because you know, when you lose two or three on the trot and you're young, it's very hard to find where's the next win going to come from. And I also did like, though, Rob Stanton's interview at the end when he said, "I put my head on the block here. I'm picking young players because if I don't, who's going to do that? Who's going to develop them?" And he knows what his role is in the grand scheme of the A-League. And he's bringing through young players who with promise and trying to turn them into the finished article.
Yeah, not an easy job, but I think he's having a really good crack at it, is Rob Stanton so far. The Jets are away to Wellington in round 7. Okay, final game of the round, arguably, probably undoubtedly, the standout game of round 6 in the Isuzu A-League. MacArthur FC 4, Adelaide United 3.
And Devola! Extraordinary! From 3-2 down to 4-3 up in the blink of an eye!
It was a 7-goal thriller in Campbelltown on a Monday night, which Mile Stojovski, funnily enough, said after the game, he actually quite liked the idea of A-League games being played on Monday night under the lights. They had, by MacArthur's standards, you know, they're still a growing fan base down there in the southwest of Sydney, and they had a pretty good crowd there for them, and the fans definitely went home happy. 4-3, let's touch on the balls first, shall we? Ulysses Davila, for me, I know Dave just mentioned that he thinks Tolga Arslan is probably up there if he gets fit and he's playing the games and he does what we know he can do, will be a very, very close contender for the Johnny Warren medal come the end of the season. For me, I think the exact same applies for Ulysses Davila. The Bulls have managed him really well this year. They're going on to, you know, the AFC Cup campaign. They've left him at home a few times. They've managed him and they are seeing the best of what is an absolutely brilliant football player and a brilliant human being as well. Tom Smithies, let's start with you. Mile Stojovski's Bulls are unbeaten. Did you see this coming, let's be honest, coming into this season, that after 6 games, the Bulls would be unbeaten and realistically, they would feel as though they probably should have had one, at least 2 wins under their name more than they currently do?
Not just unbeaten, but the fact that they've scored as many goals as anyone bar Adelaide. No, I didn't see it necessarily coming because last year was such a struggle and he's not a screamer and a shouter.
No.
Is Mile, so understated and quietly spoken, but clearly has got technical coaching ability. He's got good staff around him, and he's got some terrific players there. And I think, you know, with the solidity at the back, there's a lot of A-League experience in there. This is the flip side to what we're talking about with Newcastle. You know, players like Kieran Backus have been around for so long, Matt Yerman been around for so long, John Aspro. These guys know how to win football matches. They know how to do it tough and the dirty bit, and then you've got this brilliant skill and the mix of experience and youth up front. Didn't see it coming, but really enjoying watching it.
Mm. Yeah, I couldn't agree. I think if you throw in the likes of Jed Drew and Rafael Borges Rodriguez, Dave is someone, you know, you would have seen a fair bit when he was at Melbourne City. Valer Germain has added that touch of class up front in terms of, you know, his ability to put himself in the right positions. Even if you look at someone like Matthew Miller, who was their top goal scorer last year, Milos Stojovski made the tactical switch to move him from right back to play left wing in this game, which I'm in no doubt is an effort to try and nullify Nestori and Kunda as well. It's all working so well for MacArthur. If you flip the coin and look at Adelaide United, 4-3, Colvitt, I'm not sure if you've seen the press conference, Dave, Colvitt was absolutely fuming after this one. Essentially said they were too passive, they were inconsistent, too many errors. The belief was good for short spells, but you know, there was a fear of making errors. It feels as though Adelaide have been somewhat derailed recently, and it's quite hard to put a finger on it as to why. What have you made of the Reds in recent weeks, Dave? And what do you put this kind of slight slump down to?
Well, they're bloody entertaining for starters, aren't they? They're either, winning or scoring a lot or conceding a lot, scoring unbelievable goals. So they're, you know, as a starting point, they're very entertaining, which is an important part of football. I had a chuckle when you mentioned the post-game press conference because I did see his post-game interview with Daniel Garb on Paramount Plus. And I reckon if Garby kept poking, he probably would have fired up Carl Veer. You could see he was really trying hard to keep a lid on it. But yeah, he was very, very frustrated, you know, with that performance. I love Carl because he's pretty honest. He wears his heart on his sleeve. I think there's an element, though, of, you know, needing to protect some of the younger players occasionally. And we've mentioned that, you know, with the young players, you do get that inconsistency. I think they'll be fine. I think, you know, it's a tough trip to MacArthur, and MacArthur's going very, very well. We've touched on why they're going well, and, you know, credit to Milos Stojovski for, you know, an outstanding, I guess, debut season coaching performance or full season. But, Adelaide's an interesting one. I think they'll be okay. Moving forward. It's just you get that inconsistency. Even with Iran Kunda off the back of his $1.75 million sale to Bayern Munich, you know, he was quiet to begin with, but then, you know, he popped up with that assist and he had to, you know, come up with solutions, think his way through, the block that MacArthur put up and, you know, worked his way into the match. So I think they're learning. I've said it with a few teams, but they are still, you know, clearly a work in progress. And I think we'll see, you know, I mean, even Iran Kunda with his individual brilliance, I think we'll be able to, you know, lift them out of the doldrums if they are having challenging moments. But, I think they'll be okay. And I think it's just, you know, MacArthur, the way things are going, I don't think many teams are going to go there this season and pick up points.
Yeah, pretty resilient. I agree with you, to be honest, with Adelaide. And I think it's always worth remembering that, yes, they had a really electric start to the season, but, you know, not having someone of Craig Goodwin's calibre and class in that team will tell at some point. You know, the amount of goals and the amount of goal contributions that he would kick in through assists or being involved in the build-up to games, you know, it's hard to just immediately replace someone like that or not replace them, as was the case with Adelaide. Let's look ahead to the fixtures for round seven, guys. Central Coast Mariners against Western United kick us off on Friday night. Massive game, that one, especially for John Aloisi. Then it's Perth Glory and Melbourne City later on over at HBF Park in Perth. Saturday, Wellington against Newcastle. Sydney against MacArthur, third straight home game for Sydney FC and Ufuk Tale. Then it's Adelaide Brisbane on Sunday and Western Sydney Wanderers against Melbourne Victory to round us off. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls listening, never miss an episode. Subscribe to the official Isuzu A-League podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Tune in this Thursday as well. We've got another episode of the A-League's Fantasy Show for the latest in the world of A-League's fantasy and a preview of this weekend's round seven of the Isuzu Ute A-League and the Liberty A-League. The Liberty A-League is back this weekend after an international break for the women there. A-League's All Access this Thursday is Emily Van Egmond. I've heard from the producers of this one that it is a very, very good episode, especially it features her dad as well, discussing and reminiscing all of the things that happened at the Women's World Cup recently. We will be back next week. Tom Smithy, thanks for your time.
Always a pleasure.
Enjoy your holiday. David Davutovic, pleasure as always. Thank you.
Thanks, guys, and I'll pass on your apologies to the Volupolized.
There you go. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, stay up to date for all things A-Leagues via aleagues.com.au and keepup.com.au. Back next week with another episode. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the football.